With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore, and really pleased now to be joined by Jenny Donahue, who is a Newburyport City Councilor and a new acquaintance of mine. Jenny, welcome to MSO.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. It's really great to meet you.
Well, you know, I love having you on. It's been I was talking to Afroz Khan, who's also she's a city councilor at large in Newburyport, as you know. And it's been difficult getting interviews out of Newburyport since Mayor Holliday left. So it's great to have you on board. We love to know what's going on up there. My wife actually works in Newburyport. She did until they closed the office, and now she's working from home. But anyway, let's get to it.
Oh, geez.
Jenny, Afroz told me some things about you that I want people to know about. But let's start with your background. Please tell me a little bit about yourself and how you ended up where you are.
Sure, absolutely. Thank you so much for asking, too. So I did grow up here in Newburyport, not actually a generational native, but this is my hometown. This is where my parents landed and raised me and all my siblings. So
wait a minute. When you say they landed, did they come in on the Mayflower or what? Because my dad...
No, they did not.
My dad...
Not like some of the other families here.
Oh, okay.
No, when I say they landed, you know, they just found themselves
okay.
in this area. My father's originally from Minnesota.
Actually. Oh, all right, yep.
And my mother's from the Boston area. So
mm-hmm.
they just, you know, found themselves in this area. My father fell in love with Newburyport, never left, right? So raised his, you know, four children here. And... It is absolutely a very special place to get to call your hometown.
Mm-hmm.
Very different place when I grew up, 30, you know, years ago, 40 years ago as a kid. A little bit of a different feel here in Newburyport, a little more of a working class sort of community. But I've watched it blossom and grow and thrive and turn around on the you know, sort of historical aspect has really come to life in the past, say, 20 years with a lot of folks coming in and fixing up all the beautiful homes that, I must say, I grew up in a lot of rentals mm-hmm. around town, and you know, now they're all million-dollar homes that have been redone to their original glory, we'll say.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not that way growing up here. Right. So
mm-hmm.
it's kind of an interesting perspective that I get to have because I know what it was and I, you know, really appreciate the progression of how the beautification and all of the architecture that's been really saved and sort of given new breath, new life.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I definitely appreciate. So the historical piece to Newburyport is very close to my heart. Having gone to the localist, you know, schools and learning the localist history, you can. We actually had history taught to us in elementary school that was so local that we would take a walking field trip to where it was in town, and, mm-hmm. and that was a piece of history that was very interesting. So I love my hometown. I love Newburyport in all of its quirks and history. It's sort of just all over the place. And it has so much to offer that I really do think it's a very unique place to be, and I've always cherished that. So having said that, that's a little bit about, you know, just that why I always, you know, I feel very strongly that this is, you know, even though I'm not a generational native, it's certainly my hometown. And
I feel similar to that. My dad was in the Army. I was an Army brat, and he retired in Gloucester, and I'm ever grateful for that.
Yeah.
You know, you have a kind of a unique perspective, I think, that a lot of people don't have with respect to seeing things, if I could say that, in town.
Yes.
According to your bio on the city website, you have been a volunteer and a chairperson of the Commission on Disabilities, the Newburyport Commission on Disabilities. Please tell us about that and your perspective on that.
Oh, thank you so much for bringing that piece up. Yeah, so when I moved back here in 2010, I admittedly was away for about 10 years working down in Salem, Massachusetts, and living down there for work. And after getting married, my husband and I, who was working in Newbury at the time, commuting every day, decided to come back here. So when we did that transition, it was at the time that my vision was starting to decline to a point that I did have mobility training and started using a cane and all that sort of adaptive equipment and things like that. And I did all that transition when I lived in Salem, in the city. So when I moved back here in 2010, I was still working and I was commuting. I was walking from where I live because we actually bought a place about a 7-minute walk from the train. And it wasn't a safe walk. We'll say that. There's not a direct crossing or safe crossing to get over to the train station mm-hmm. in Newburyport. So it was a little, you know, tenuous for about a year of doing that. Then things just sort of changed, and I had my first son, child, my only child, and didn't go back to work, but then did bring up this issue of there not being any APS units at any of the crosswalks in the city is what I had found when I moved back here. And to back up an APS unit, which is always the question, what is that? That is the audio pedestrian signal.
Oh, okay.
That you hear at
yes.
the crosswalk.
Yes.
In terms of, like, it could be a bird chirping, a buzzing, a voice talking, counting down the seconds that you have to cross. That's an APS unit.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2010, there were none in Newburyport, not one. And I noticed it immediately because I certainly rely on those to be able to know when the cars have the red light in order to have some idea if it's safe to cross, having the low vision. So I was sort of shuffled around the city with my question until I landed at the Commission on Disabilities that a counselor at the time had referred me to, and I didn't know was a thing. Not many people do. So I went to their meeting with my issue. They heard me out, and they were really at that time two members and not even having a full quorum to really be able to do anything as a commission at that time. So they heard me out and then essentially just asked me if I'd be willing to join their commission as a volunteer, which entailed meeting once a month for an hour. And I thought, well, you know, they clearly need help, and they're dwindling. They're barely holding on by a thread of existing as a commission.
Mm-hmm.
They're supposed to have 7 to 9 members. So I couldn't say no. There was a need. I'm absolutely the type of person that, you know, see a need, fill a need. Like, I'm by nature wanting to help and solve and troubleshoot and just really was like, couldn't say no. How could I say no? I had no background in that type of thing. I came from managing a candy store in Salem, Mass for 10 years. So, and my previous life was really all based on service industry, restaurants, retail,
mm-hmm.
all of that. So this was a whole new world. And mind you, I'd also just started this sort of whole new chapter in my life, becoming a wife and a mother and back in my hometown and, you know, Big shift. So naturally, that seemed like a no-brainer to say yes and join on that commission. And within a few months, we lost one of the two members. He passed. He was a really incredible with that whole realm of knowledge. He was brilliant, and he did so much great work for Newburyport. That was Tom Lyons. And the other person at the time that was chair, within about 6 months or so, had injured herself and made her disability worse, and then subsequently asked me to take over as chair because there wasn't anyone else to ask.
Okay.
And so by default, and again, how could I say no? Because the alternative was that they would just not have that commission anymore. Of course, I said yes, even though, again, no experience in that sort of like municipal volunteer realm. I figured, well, I can't let it die, you know. So I spent the better half of my first few years on the commission just building it up
mm-hmm.
and promoting it within the city, letting folks know it existed, reaching out for more folks to join. That was a huge focus. And I did build it up, and I did really get it to a very thriving point, branded us, let the community know about us, became much more active in everything that was going on in the city. And in that 10 years, we accomplished some pretty great tasks. We got handicap accessible swings in all 8 of our city playgrounds. It was an initiative that I was extremely proud of, one of the last things I got to be a part of. And prior to that, you know, we were trying to combat the issue with handicap parking fraud and placard abuse, and we raised the fine and put new signs out throughout the city to try to curb people's, you know, nature to pull into those spots for 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And there's a lot of data to back up that that is a problem, and it still is. Mm-hmm. It's rampant, and it's nationwide. It's a terrible mentality folks have. They think that the handicapped parking spots are temporary parking, and they abuse them as such. So we continuously try to brainstorm ways to address that, and other, you know, smaller pieces that we had worked on is just addressing concerns that folks would bring to us, making sort of advisory positions on things that the city might be doing or embarking on in terms of projects. We would get to weigh in a little bit and sort of work closely with our city's ADA coordinator. And I really built a relationship between the ADA coordinator and the Disability Commission when I came on as well, because prior to that, they really weren't so involved. And it ended up going to another person. That, the ADA coordinator for a city is sort of like a hat that gets passed around to any number of employees that already work for the city. So that hat can land on someone that cares and really wants to commit to that role, or someone that doesn't have the bandwidth and is already too busy, or just doesn't, you know, have that inclination. So we lucked out with some pretty good ADA coordinators and really got to be a part of the planning process much more than previously. And that really helps the city be proactive in terms of access and removing barriers and being, you know, having the forethought. Right, when you're doing those types of plans. So I was heavily involved for a decade with all of that, mm-hmm. and promoting and advocating and advising and learning as I went, of course. The best part, I think, in terms of learning was the ability to go to the Community Access Monitor training through the Massachusetts Office on Disability, and how much I learned from that office and my connections with those folks. That training session was, it's a 2-day session, and it's so full of all the information about ADA and access and everything.
So now you've had to leave all that to someone else now, as you are now the Ward 2 city councilor, and you've left it in good hands from what it sounds like.
Unfortunately, they're still looking for permanent chairperson. Mm-hmm. I cannot technically be a member or a chairperson. So we do currently have 2 interim co-chairs.
Okay.
That are longtime members.
All right, so now...
They are still...
So you go from that perspective and you go to city council, and not that the issues are more important now, but there's sort of... you have a wider screen now, I'm sure, as a city councilor. And what are one or two of the highest objectives that you have at the moment? What's going on from your perspective in city council?
Sure, thank you. Well, that's definitely a big answer question, right? So first, let me explain. I'm a ward councilor for Ward 2. Mm-hmm. So what that means is my area of the city essentially includes downtown, a bit of the historical South End, and then down towards the train, down towards Route 1. So it's one of the toughest wards in the city because you're contending with all the mixed use. It's not just residential. It's you know, really, it's the center town. And we have a very thriving downtown.
Mm-hmm.
So that being said, the change is tremendous. The position is very different. And of course, my sort of umbrella is much, much, much wider. So for the past year and a few months, I've been focused on addressing ward concerns, very responsive. I think any of my ward residents that have reached out to me could attest to that, that I'm very approachable and responsive, and whenever they have an issue, I do whatever I can to address it and get it to, you know, taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
Other things I have sort of had is points of, you know, interest for me in the past. You know, I mean, it's been a bit of an interesting year for the council. We've had a lot of big issues come our way that kind of didn't get resolved. So there's a lot of carryover this year. And it's been difficult. I mean, it, admittedly, it's a very new sort of world, in that with new administration, after the, you know, having the same administration for 12 years, and of course a fairly different council than previous years, and you know, really it's 11 very different individuals, and some of my issues that I continue to focus on have a lot to do with safety, accessibility, access, that sort of realm, because that is a little bit of my wheelhouse of experience with this community and knowing what we're lacking. So I was very pleased to be pointed to a couple of the committees of the city council that essentially handle all of those types of things. So I've really enjoyed being able to voice and have a voice, right, for the folks that don't typically have a strong one and will not necessarily bring up these smaller issues, but I'm pretty quick to ask about a lot of the details when it comes to, you know, infrastructure projects and safety and building and streets and sidewalks plan and all of that. I'm very sort of admittedly, you know, have the agenda of making Newburyport a more accessible, inclusive community than it's been.
As
has to do with infrastructure.
As we record this, Jenny, I understand. Now, we're recording on Thursday, and you have an informational presentation tonight. What's that all about?
Yes, so that's the latest effort that I did sort of pick up this year as a priority, and it's based on really trying to problem solve for the city. Before I say what it's for, tonight's presentation, the premise of it came really born around how much back and forth we've had as a council in debating how to pay for things. Capital projects, for instance, a building for Newburyport Youth Services has been a huge back and forth. How do we pay for it? How do we pay for it? Should we pay for it? You know, I'm a huge advocate for that particular program and service in our city. So to me, I'm thinking, okay, we need new revenue. We need more money. We're not able to pay for the projects that we really, as an old community, old city, need to tackle without cutting somebody out. And that's been our biggest battle. So that led me to sort of really explore what do we have in the city. I recently got to sit on Economic Development Committee for Newburyport and really got to pick up on what we do have and what we're missing. And one of the most blatantly obvious things we're missing is revenue from the new industry of retail cannabis for adults. And there's a history there from the report. And that is an issue I'm bringing back, because we ended up in a very funky position where in 2016, when the state approved it for legality, Newburyport was a yes community. We were overwhelmingly a yes community. And there was one ward in the city that voted no overwhelmingly, but the rest of the city overwhelmingly voted yes.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, once cities and towns that were yes cities started enacting their laws and creating zoning for it and such, Newburyport did that. They went through a year of zoning process to nail down the zoning because it was very contentious and somewhat controversial with the business districts being in Ward 2 and 5. And Ward 5 did not vote for it, in, you know, if you were to look at the numbers by ward. So there was a lot of pushback, we'll say. And by 2019, they finished the zoning and were just about to approve it. And a group of opposition formed a campaign called Opt Out Newburyport to get a question on a ballot question to essentially prohibit retail cannabis sales in Newburyport, because their premise was that the 2016 question was too vague, and you know, their big reason for wanting to have that vote again was because they wanted the question to be more specific to Newburyport. Should we have cannabis shops in Newburyport? So in 2019, there was quite the embroilment between an opt-out campaign and the folks that did not want to opt out, which was the majority voters of the city, you know, from 2016. But they did manage to get a non-binding referendum question on the ballot in 2019, which is important to note was total off-election year. I can't even remember if there was even any elected official positions that year. I think it was just referendum questions. Mm-hmm. And so, well, you know, it was not a presidential election turnout that, like it was, yes. So it's debatable how legitimate that particular non-binding referendum election was the voice of the entire Newburyport population, because it did pass. In that the opt-out folks won that election with their question to prohibit. So a yes vote meant to prohibit the sales, and they did win by a margin, notably. But again, in a very off election. And also, it is worth noting that there was a lot of monies that were contributed to that campaign by, you know, people with big pockets, basically, that just were... The sentiment at the time was all the unknowns and all the fear of the unknowns, because it hadn't really been in play anywhere yet. So they had a good argument. And basically, the position Newburyport took at that time, after the non-binding referendum question passed to prohibit cannabis sales, it then went back to the city council to decide to act on. They could have at that time not acted on it, because they had that right. But they were pretty much bullied into acting on it. I mean, I did sit through those public sessions, and the opt-out people were screaming at councilors, like really aggressive and angry and bullying. And I watched it. I mean, I heard it. You know, I mean, I can't really say I watched it with my own ears. I heard it with my own ears.
Okay.
And essentially the city council said, okay, we've heard you, and, you know, we're going to act on this, you know, for the sake of democracy to prohibit these sales, with the premise that we're going to wait and see. We're going to take a wait-and-see approach while everyone else around us dives in, essentially. And it was said by the council president time and time again that this will be revisited, and it's not, you know, the end. It's just we're going to take a slower approach and see how it goes in other communities first. And we'll revisit it in a few years. That was essentially how it all went down in 2019.
All right, so it's been a few years, and I'm sure
a few years.
I'm sure you've researched how successful it's been in other cities and towns around.
Yes, and there is oodles of information now to point to the facts, because it's so heavily regulated, unlike anything we've ever had in retail.
Right, right.
That everything is, you know, every incident, every little thing, that everything is accounted for and reported to the state Cannabis Control Commission. So we have data, we have facts, we know when and where incidents have occurred, and the frequency, which is, there's no frequency. It's like, you know, a one-off instance once in 6 years for an establishment that maybe had one negative impact incident.
Your cell is beginning to fade a little bit, Jenny. We can revisit this. We're going to keep doing this. I hope Afroz is going to come on maybe once a month or so, and we can do the same with you if you'd like. But if you would please give me the information on where, what, and when this informational discussion is going to be.
Yes, thank you. So tonight I am hosting a public informational presentation with a slideshow. It is just hosted myself, and the gentleman that's joining me at the Senior Center tonight at 7 p.m. till 8:30 p.m. is from the Massachusetts. I'm sorry, I just want to make sure I say this right.
Sure. Yep.
It is the Massachusetts Cannabis Retailers Association.
Okay.
So essentially that is like the Chamber of Commerce for cannabis retail. So that's the expert that will be joining me with a slide presentation as well. And I'm basically just going to be presenting why I'd like to revisit this, why I think it's time, and listen to any questions that come up. If it's appropriate, we'll do a Q&A. So that is, yes, tonight, 7 to 8:30 at the Newburyport Senior and Community Center in their main room. And I invite anyone from the public to come and listen to the details.
All right. That is Ward 2 City Councilor Jenny Donahue in the city of Newburyport. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.